This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 16th of August, 2022, and having a difficult time piecing together a narrative for what happened yesterday. We had quite an interesting combination of movements across markets. So it does make some sense to see the equity market advancing when you have yields in retreat and a crude oil with an especially sharp sell-off. And we'll get to you all on that. Hopes for an Iran nuclear deal, certainly part of that big move. But on the other hand, the dollar managing, despite those that drop in yields and despite the pretty strong risk sentiment, managing to rally and quite strongly so, and bouncing back versus an earlier sell-off against the yen, which was very volatile yesterday. So just an odd narrative. And I think one of the key signals to follow is the dollar itself, which we have to remember is unto itself a financial condition. And I think we should maybe perk up our ears a little bit and sharpen our sense of maybe danger if this dollar is set to continue stronger here. And I'll have some more thoughts on that later. But I guess key to note technically, Peter, we're getting to some key levels here. We're not quite there yet in the NASDAQ 100 to that 14,000 level, which is where the 200-day moving average is dropping towards. But we're almost here, essentially, on the S&P 500. Just yesterday's peak was only a few points shy of around 4317, which is where we have the 200-day moving average for the S&P 500. So I don't know if you have any fresh thoughts on what's going on here.
I know there were a lot of movements in currencies and in interest rates yesterday, and we had an extension of S&P 500 futures. And as you said, we're getting close to the 200-day moving average. I mean, if you look at the financial condition index from the Chicago Fed, it has come down considerably over the past 6-7 weeks. We are at levels where we were back in mid-April. And if you try to square that with where we were in the S&P 500 in mid-April, it leaves a little bit room to the upside, so we could go to that 200-day moving average and potentially even beyond. I mean, I think the long-term yield curve in the U.S. seems quite well behaved right now, and expectations for inflation now begins to be really, being bolstered around. It's easing, also on the back of these weaker than expected Chinese numbers that came in the other day. And then the VIX is just sitting just below 20, so it's comfortable. I don't feel comfortable. There's always when things get to this energy level, it always just a starting point before something new happens, and that's essentially what I'm waiting for. we're waiting for the next shock to jolt the equity market. It seems almost too complacent, too easy now.
Yeah, we've discussed a little bit that shock could come in the form of the Fed needing to brush up on its forward guidance, perhaps at the Jackson Hole conference coming up August 25th to 27th. We'll of course find out then. We did have a couple of very weak data points, but important to maintain some perspective around those. I mean, we have the Empire Manufacturing, a very, very volatile, and I want to underline very a couple times there, survey registering the kind of levels we saw in the teeth of the worst part of the 2008 crisis. But this is one very volatile regional manufacturing survey, so we can't always pull so much away from that. And then this one of the better leading indicators on the U.S. housing market, and the emphasis needs to be on leading because it leads with a very there's a significant lag in terms of the actual impact on the market from this survey, or what the survey is picking up. The NAHB survey dropping another 6 points to 49. And just for perspective, the last time we had a big housing cycle in the U.S. back, of course, 2005 to 2007, when the housing market was rolling over. And that housing market bubble, driven by extreme leverage and very irresponsible behavior linked to derivatives. And this is not the case this time around. There's much less leverage in the market. So important to emphasize. So we're on that NAHB survey, we are where we were in the spring of 2006. And if you think back to the timing of the housing market back then, it wasn't until early 2007 that nominal prices actually started to roll over to negative year-on-year levels. And it wasn't until the summer of 2007 that we saw the first, if you will, landmines and grenades going off in the financial system when Bear Stearns had a couple of internal hedge funds that blew up and spooked the market as the first real big lead-in into the financial crisis. So it's a leading indicator, and that means we're going to have to wait around a while to see actual nominal things happening in terms of year-on-year price drops, etc. But I think it's important to get over to you, Ole, because we had a very big move in crude oil yesterday, hopes for an Iranian nuclear deal. If this is struck, I mean, what kind of actual supply potential are we talking about from Iran?
Well, it's just looking at historical data, John. Iran is currently producing around 1.2 million barrels less per day than what they did just before the Trump reintroduced the or scrapped the nuclear deal a few years ago. So that potential is a million barrel plus is the potential for increase. We have to remember that is more or less offsetting the eventual stop of supplies coming from U.S. strategic reserves. They have been releasing almost close to a million barrels a day now for many weeks. That will stop sometime next month, I believe, and so that will go along quite a bit of way to offset that. It is additional supply. It's coming at a time where we had some economic data pointing to potential to slow down in demand from the economic from slow economic growth, and that's really the double-edged driver that's taking us down to these levels. So Brent has not really broken anything yet, but 93 is coming into a view here, and if it does take that out, then 90 would be next, and 85 in WTI. So it does obviously support the lower inflation story, but on the other hand, you just have to flip that around and take a look at gas prices. We are heading we're hitting another new high this morning in European gas markets. We're up 6%, 233 euros per megawatt. That is driving up electricity prices excuse my French, obscene levels as well. It is right now the crisis in Europe is led by the drought we had and the low river levels on some of the major rivers across through Europe, especially for Germany. The Rhine has reduced the ability to transport coal and other fuel products. That basically means utilities they are forced to fire up their gas. The gas turbines and gas, as we can see, is being lifted as a consequence. So really bad news for Europe, what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and I don't know in FX if that's behind part of the euro weakness. I imagine it is. But if we see eurodollar, it really cemented that reversal. It tried to get work up into the higher zone on the back of that weak CPI print out of the U.S. last week. It thoroughly failed to do so. And now it's reversed so sharply that we're looking actually at downside break levels. Let's call it 101 on eurodollar and 120 on cable. I'm pretty sure I like cable as the fundamental trade there for a test of the lows for the cycle. Let's call it 117 and below for cable on a break below 120. And then elsewhere, looking at this focus on risks around China and them feeling so much under pressure that commodities are taking note, and we're seeing the Chinese central bank easing already. Looking at Aussie dollar, it's reversed course after squeezing considerably above the zero spot 70 level, but I think it would be cemented the reversal on a close below that zero spot 70 level for a potential test of its lows for the cycle back lower. And on that note, it's a pretty strong antipodean focus, if you will, on the Wednesday Asian session tonight, because we have the Q2 wage index out of Australia. It's expected plus 2.7% year on year, not particularly peppy stuff in terms of wage rises for Australia. But around those levels or slightly below, I think the RBA can start to ease back on its forward guidance at future meetings. It's carried out 350 basis point hikes at three consecutive meetings. And let's keep in mind the tempo of RBA meetings are every month versus usually eight per year in most other central banks. So especially if it's a soft data point there, I think you'll could see a capitulation in the Aussie longs overnight. And then we have the RBNZ up tonight, expected with its 50 basis point hike. Remember, it was one of the first movers among G10 central banks to hike rates and was quite aggressive and persistent in doing so. So its rate will be all the way up at 3% after this hike tonight. Market is starting to sort of pull off what it's expecting for the last two meetings of this year. So it's priced for 44 basis points in October and another 36 in November after tonight's 50 basis point hike. But given the drop in oil prices, given the outlook surveys and the absolute dumps, whether it's consumer or business, the focus on China, et cetera, I wonder if the RBNZ in the press conference and possibly in the monetary policy statement starts to ease off on the guidance as well. So watch out for that development or those developments in the Asian session tonight. Peter, we have a couple of interesting retail names on the calendar. You discussed those yesterday, but is that your primary focus here, or is it just the broader market, or what are you looking for in terms of coming developments here?
Yeah, I mean, today we have an earnings focus on Walmart and Home Depot, whereas the Walmart is facing difficulties passing on their input cost. The operating margin has taken a hit by a little bit more than 1 percentage point, and given it's a low margin business, it's a pretty big deal. So going from 7.1 to 6.1, this is quite significant. So revenue growth is expected to be around 6% for Walmart compared to the previous year, but their profits down 8 to 10% according to consensus. And so I think that Walmart is still the U.S. the largest U.S. retailer, so their outlook I think carries some significance for sentiment in U.S. equities today. So I'm very curious to what they say about the recent developments, but also this potentially overhang of inventory that they're facing and other retailers. And then we have Home Depot. Home Depot is still, you know, getting very robust demand from the U.S. housing market despite interest rates moving higher, and we are seeing some softness. The overall pace and strength, I think, in the U.S. U.S. housing market is still strong, and Home Depot is expected to see a 10% increase in their earnings compared to the previous year. And then in the growth segment, we have C Limited, which is a fast growing Southeast Asia e-commerce and gaming company. Revenue growth is coming sharply lower. Their cash flow from operation has deteriorated from plus 300 million to minus 700 million in just 1 year. They're facing a lot of issues with both in the gaming division, losing the attention and engagement from their user base there, but also the rising logistics costs have really eaten into margins. And then just, you know, there's just heated competition. But otherwise, in equities, it's I'm just really waiting for the next pivot point. You already have provided some guidance, John, of where it could come from. But yeah, otherwise, it just seems very quiet in equities right now.
Yeah, one place that's not been quiet overnight was the BHP report. Ulan, I forgot to mention that earlier. So very strong results. And they, despite my sort of negative comments on Australia and on China, I'm seeing a Bloomberg headline that demand is healing in China. So what's your take on what's going on here?
Well, they record a record profit, and considering that they're operating within coal, nickel, and copper, that obviously explains that. But what was obviously we were interesting to look at was the outlook, and the while they're seeing the market being reasonably balanced in the short to medium term, they're basically seeing a recovery in China as providing some tailwind to global growth, and that could help offset weaknesses elsewhere. But I think what is important from our thematic views about the mining and about the industrial metals is a reiteration that the CEO talked about these unstoppable global trends: decarbonization, electrification, and population growth. All and obviously increasing standards of living. All of these basically just supporting the demand for the key metals that they produce over the coming years. And copper obviously is one of those. And I would say after we rallied to the 90 or recovered 19% from the low in copper that we saw a month ago, we saw a correction yesterday. That correction was not strong enough to take it outside of the current uptrend. So for now, at least. That weakness that has come in through these recent the weaker data from China has not to any extent, at least for now, hurt the current recovery that we're seeing across the copper space.
All right, and while on the subject of China and especially the U.S. dollar, whether it's breaking higher, we need to keep an eye on and put this one back on your radar if it's been off the radar. So U.S. Treasury yields, they seem to be very quiet here. They may or may not remain so, but the dollar CNH and dollar CNY exchange rates, if we're breaking to new highs there, and especially if we're doing so in volatile fashion, it could suggest a more pointed move by China to allow their currency to weaken, to export deflation to the world, and feeling a bit more comfortable in doing so here, where given where commodity prices have descended to, especially, of course, oil prices. So that would be one place to look as well for what's coming next. And then a small tail risk thing, no idea how to quantify this, but the whole focus on Trump and this FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago, to what degree this is the independent wheels of justice turning. I'm not going to comment on that. I don't want to wade into that a hornet's nest of politics, but there is, of course, a Trump base that no matter what will believe that everything is a conspiracy theory, witch hunt, and everything that Trump sort of drums up among his sort of more hardcore base. So I think there is the risk of shenanigans, at least in terms of, I don't know if it'll be civil disobedience or uncivil disobedience, but just something to have as a thought as well. All right, that's a wrap for today. Hopefully tomorrow we'll be back with our slightly more normal podcast style with slides and everything. But in any case, that's a wrap, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.